Welcome to the New York Times podcast. Your TMZ will be standing out there with cameras and not even take a picture of me. I get sick of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
I keep my gun in my drawers, duck in the sad news. My phone say seven missed calls, I know it's bad news. This life had left me so scarred, I'm knowing that's true. Remember, tongue got so hard, I got it tattooed.
We are going to talk about some of my sing rap favorites this week. Rod Wave, Lil TJ, Polo G, etc. Al Pierre is going to call in a sec. I wanted to just also give a couple shout outs at the top for a couple folks that have checked in. First, shout out Nate and Ricky at Gertie in Brooklyn. I see you guys. When I was talking to Taylor Lorenz last week, she said that she had been talking to Colin and Samir, who do a podcast about Popcast. So shout out Colin and Samir. Shout out my guy Clyde at the Washington Post, who checked in. Let me know that he listened to Popcast. Hello to everybody. It's been an active week. A lot has been going on. But the most crucial thing that I think has been happening on the charts is everywhere you turn, it's Rod Wave, it's Lil TJ, it is Sing Rap 4.0 or 5.0, 6.0. It's a lot to get through. There's no one I'd rather get through it with than Al Pierre. And here he is, Alphonse. What a joy to have you as always. What's good, man?
Thank you for having me, John. No, things are going as well as they can go.
Are you feeling more singing today or more rapping for yourself, your personal mood? Where are you at? Where are you on the spectrum today?
I feel like a nice mellow singing today. That's where I'm at.
That's an actual vibe. That's like an actual vibe. Strong support. We support a mellow post R&B moment on Popcast for sure. So we're going to get into a lot of stuff today. We're going to get into Rod Wave, Polo G, Mooski, TJ. It's been a heavy few months for the nth wave generation of sing rappers. Last week, I wrote about the Rod Wave record and the TJ record because it really struck me that, you know, they're working two kind of like parallel paths of the same structural approach, but like paths that don't really intersect with each other because of the emotional content and the vocal tones. But I would love to start with Rod Wave, who is someone I like a lot. I think you like a lot. And I'm intrigued by because there's something to me, I've written about this a little bit a couple times now. There's something sort of bluesy about Rod Wave. There's something about him that's like a little untethered from the broader narratives of like melodic hip hop. There's something that's like a little bit more classic, a little bit more like old school in the truest sense of old about him. Where do you see Rod fitting in this generation? Do you think he feels simpatico with the generation, or you think he exists a little bit outside of it?
I think it's a little bit of both. Like the topics that he talks about, like all the trauma, the pain, the always just reflecting on some dark moment from his past, that's very much like aligned with like where rap has been since maybe like Drill and just like those dark topics that they always cover. But the way he goes about it with his singing voice is, like, as you mentioned, it's bluesy. This latest album he released seems very, like, rooted. I don't know how intentional or if it was his choice, but it seems almost rooted in some sort of, like, 90s gospel a little bit. And
so true.
And so it's, like, this weird combination that makes him of this moment, but also kind of existing somewhere outside of it.
Do you pay attention to much contemporary gospel?
I don't really. I feel like that's like something that I know a lot of people have grown up around gospel and been around it, but I haven't really paid attention to that much contemporary.
Okay, so a few years ago, I was working on a piece about like an up and coming contemporary gospel label. They had like Kalante Gavin, Bree Babineaux. Like they were doing like a lot of internet savvy stuff, which obviously in the gospel space was pretty novel. You know, I really checked in with gospel pretty heavy during that time and subsequently. And it's interesting because there is this streak in contemporary gospel that's like kind of the opposite of what we think of as like big choral gospel, even like Kirk Franklin type choir gospel, which is to say like contemporary sounding. There's this other streak, which is almost like acoustic soul gospel. Like you sort of like Jonathan McReynolds, Travis Green, almost like what Rod Wave is doing reminds me sometimes more of that, even though that music is like super clean, you know, it's super pristine, right? But it reminds me more of that than like Lil Baby, you know, or TJ or whoever. There's something about it, that balance of the production choices, the spareness, the subject matter, that really, really reminds me of this kind of streak in contemporary gospel. I'm so happy you heard that too, because it was so striking to me when I was listening, especially to this album. And we opened up with Tombstone. The new album is called Soulfly. Tombstone, maybe with a different title, could be a gospel song, right? Like, straight up.
It really could be. And you mentioned like acoustics, like he loves either like an acoustic guitar or like a sad ass piano.
Sad piano.
he loves that stuff so much. And so it definitely is like reminiscent.
On the last album, on Pray for Love, I remember when I was reviewing it, when I was taking notes, I literally would just have like song title and I would be like, it would either be like piano or guitar. It would just be like, you know, like track one, title, piano, track two, title, guitar. Like that was, because I just realized that like that was the dominant choices that he was making were really instrumental choices. Obviously, he's a good lyricist and I think a very good singer, but the dominant choices were these kind of sad instruments. Do you feel like that sets him apart a little bit from everybody else working in this space?
I don't think that part sets him apart, because I feel like even if you go to somebody like Polo G loves a melancholy sound of piano, or if you go to the Alabama singers like No Cap and Rilo Rodriguez, they love an acoustic guitar or like a blues sample. And so I don't feel like it sets him apart in that way.
Shout out Rilo Rodriguez.
I love some Rilo.
Also a Joe Coscarelli favorite. Shout out Rilo Rodriguez. So in a vocal tone way, there is a heft of emotion, and there's a thickness in the way that Rod Wave sings. And it's interesting, like sometimes I'll watch old clips when he was just rapping, and it doesn't quite hit me the same way as when he dips into there's a richness that only really comes out in his voice when he sings. And I think it's striking that more people don't talk about Rod Wave, because Rod Wave is so popular. Like, he's so popular on a pure numbers level. But I think because, in a way, his modes are more consistent with blues modes, gospel modes, somehow that kind of like escapes mainstream, aka white attention. It's interesting how it like functions like totally in the open, but like people aren't really plugged into it in that way.
I think one of my favorite ways to just like listen to Rod Wave music is I love watching his like live performances. Not like live as like a recording from like a concert, but like he has this one at like Genius where he's doing like a studio performance. There's the performance on Fallon. And I feel like that's in line with gospel artists as well, is like they're good live performers, like especially recorded live performances. And so I feel like he really comes alive through that.
On the Fallon performance, definitely came through with the tracksuit and the flip-flops. Definitely a very specific choice. Also, shout out All the Smoke, who filmed that performance. So this is the third Rod Wave album. I mean, not counting the early tapes, this is the third major label Rod Wave record, right? Ghetto Gospel, Pray for Love, now Soulfly. I don't feel like he's making any, I don't know if concessions is the right word, but I just feel like he's becoming more specific and almost verging on idiosyncratic the more established he's becoming. Like, I don't feel him bending at all. What do you hear evolutionarily over these three tapes?
I feel like he really leaned into the mood of the music. Like, even when you get into like Ghetto Gospel and Pray for Love, it's not as, to be blunt, it's not as sad sounding. And I think he's really leaned into that. And also, it's a little bit more spiritual. There's a lot more mention of God and praying. And even though that's always been in his music, like you could tell by the titles, but it's definitely leaning into it even more.
Actually, we should listen to something off the last record, off Pray for Love. Let's listen to Ribbon in the Sky.
Picture me rolling in my 500 Benz. I got no love for these ain't no need to be friends. I don't with these ain't no need to pretend. Ain't no trust in a after this. You said you love me, but you're leaving me.
I think you're right. As he's becoming more famous, he's leaning into this like more obviously spiritual content, and not to be like, this isn't how it would have been 10 or 20 years ago, but forgive me, this isn't how it would have been 10 or 20 years ago. Someone like Rod Wave would have gotten more popular, better known, and would have bent himself or contorted himself or been forced to contort more towards a broadly, I don't want to say pop, but a more collaborative mindset, a more like, okay, can you do something that works in a bunch of different spaces? That is the exact opposite of what's happening here. It's becoming more particular. It's becoming more insular. And I agree, a little bit darker. And that's like, to me, as a career arc, that's really refreshing. As a kind of like moral arc, I worry about him because I listened to this record and I was like, dog, you okay? You know, like, can we help you? Like, do you need, like, what's going on? I feel like worried a little bit for him. You get that vibe a little?
Yeah, you're right. He really doesn't collaborate with anybody. It seems like he could record this in like a closet in like a hotel room by himself. And I'm pretty sure like the only collaborations that come to mind are one he did with Kevin Gates, who's definitely like an influence of his. Kevin Gates and the Boosies. And I'm sure those are people he listened to a lot. I mean, it's definitely something that I've noticed.
And on this new record, like the only guest is Polo G. When you think about like the kind of persistence and widespread nature of collaboration, one of the things that makes that happen is when people are comfortable going into spaces that are not their own space. I don't at all get the sense that Rod Wave is comfortable either going into other people's spaces or allowing other people into his space. You're right. It seems so cloistered, so walled off.
We talked about how he's not really covered in like media or something. We really don't know that much about him that is not learned from his music. And he seems like, I'm sure if you asked him, it'd be like, everything you need to know about me is in my music. But he seems closed off in that way. And I feel like a few of the other artists in that lane are too. Polo G is to an extent, not as much, but he really is.
Do you see Rod Wave's Complex Sneaker Shopping?
I didn't watch it. I've taken a strong stance against sneaker shopping, but
I'm sorry, Joe. I didn't know Al came with violence today. I didn't know. But like even on this, okay, so I watched it. So you didn't have to, I watched it. And even in that, in which, you know, the thing about sneaker shopping is it's like literally like the most comfortable of all these things, right? It's like all you have to do is buy stuff, like talk about sneakers and buy stuff. And there is still like a little bit of reticence, a little bit of reluctance, a little bit of like, I don't know if I'm going to come out of my shell exactly for this. And even though it's filmed in his hometown, like it's not filmed at like Flight Club in LA or Stadium Goods, you know, it's filmed in his hometown. But there's still a little bit of like, I would almost call it wariness of the attention. And that's like a real Rod Wave energy. Insularity and wariness, I think, is like real Rod Wave energy.
Yeah, he seems like uncomfortable with all of it, but and sort of skeptical. And I mean, you never know like how much of it is played up a little bit and how much of it isn't, but it does seem kind of natural and real. And I think that's one of like the crucial parts about these artists is that they do seem kind of real and that they do seem like real people. And I guess part of why they guard them is to help elevate that persona.
And I think it's interesting because there used to be, you know, I at least feel like journalistically, I used to be really excited, you know, get the first interview. So, you know, it's like the first time you've ever heard from so-and-so, I want to get that interview. But now sometimes I feel people are getting famous so fast, it's almost like I want to wait a little bit, you know, like I want to like give it a little breathing space because that you'll get a better story if you wait a little bit.
Yeah, especially when they start getting more comfortable and maybe even able to wrap their heads around what's happening.
100%. 100%. Is there a track you particularly like on the new record?
Let's go with Soulfly.
Okay, cool. This is the title track from the new Rod Wave record. This is Soulfly.
It be challenging. So many challenges.
We'll come out of that with a hard pivot. Rod Wave, the Bluesman, Lil TJ, the Splenda of Sing Rap. I want to be honest, man. when I heard those first few Lil TJ songs, I don't know if I would have predicted that where we're at right now is where we would have ended up. And I say that because I felt like, especially in, was it Brothers was one of the early singles, like one of the first two or three singles?
Yeah.
There was something about Brothers, and I felt like, in a way, it was kind of like the thoughtful, reflective counterpart to what A Boogie was doing at that time. There was like an added layer from a distance, an added layer of depth. But TJ, I feel like, has gone almost like full pop rap in a weird way. What do you think about the arc that TJ's had over the last couple of years?
It's definitely way more pop rap. Like, if you listen to that song he has with Black, it's almost like a pop song. And I remember that I had interviewed him maybe 2 years ago. When you interview rappers, a lot of times they'll say, oh, I want to make a pop song. I want to make the biggest song ever. And he has really leaned into that. Those early songs, like you mentioned, Brothers, really are in that vein of like A Boogie, where it's just like he's just talking about what's going on around him. And it's kind of simple, and it's he's singing, but not really like belting. It's like this weird sing-songy thing going on. And this latest album, which I don't like as much as those earlier songs.
You mean the current album, you don't like it as much as the early songs? Because I that's how I feel. I don't like the current album as much as the earlier stuff.
It's weaker, and it does lean into like that singing more. And it's a little bit more poppy, but also kind of like melancholy, but in like in a soft way, which is different from like the Rod Wave album, which is kind of heavy. And it's like a weird blend that I don't think exactly works, even though it's only getting more popular.
In the same way that Rod Wave is creating an aesthetic that's designed to be both insular and also kind of like repelling outside attention or outside participation, TJ, I think, is going in the opposite direction. I think he's basically trying to invite as many people into the party as possible and also be a part of as many other parties as possible. So let's listen to Calling My Phone, which is the song with Black, which is, I agree, just like a straight pop record, basically, as we understand contemporary pop in 2021.
Steady calling my phone. I done told you before that it's over. Leave me alone. No, it's hurting you to see me gone. Dark clouds, you gon' see me storm. I won't go back. But trust me, you gon' hold that. Hold that.
So TJ, and I sometimes think of TJ almost in a similar category, a little bit more melodic, but a similar category to Lil Mosey, where and Lil Mosey, I just learned today, has a pretty nasty charge against him. So just to let everybody know, I'm aware of that. But musically, I mean, TJ and Mosey, that sweetness, that fundamental, like kind of like almost like a naivete in the tone, ends up creating all these touch points where you can do more collaborations or more people feel that they have access. They're welcome to the party, basically. And that like line of sweetness feels like very much like something that's happened in the last like 18 to 24 months. That's just like a subset of like the whole category that we're talking about right now.
It's definitely something that he's added and leaned into. It's almost closer in content to things they're talking about in like Brooklyn drill music.
Yes, 100%.
Than what it is now. And I think that's a purposeful change of direction.
Yes, for sure, for sure. I think the reason it was so exciting to me when it first happened was I was like, oh, someone's going to take the A Boogie structural approach, but really keep the content different. They're going to keep the content street-oriented, a little bit darker, a little bit more emotionally troubled, right? Because A Boogie just like went straight for heartbreak. It's heartbreak Drake all day long with A Boogie.
But even though you bring up A Boogie, he's had like a similar like transition. Like if you go to those early like 2016, 2017 records, they're a little bit harder too. And when you look at his like the more recent songs, they're softer. They're more about heartbreak and the softer side of things he's going through, which is much different from like that, those early, just like, oh, I'm from High Bridge Records.
Also, A Boogie has like Don Q by his side, right? So it's like Don Q. The reason I got distracted a second ago was I just was like mentally flashing to the A Boogie Don Q Funk Flex freestyle. You ever watch that freestyle? Like the first one they did together?
Yeah.
So the Don Q stuff on there is so good. Like I would pay, like, if Vinyl Me Please did like a limited run $50 vinyl of the Don Q verses in that freestyle, like I would pay $50 for it. You know, like, it's, they're that good. Pedro, we're going to play, I know it's not on topic for the episode, but let's play some of the Don Q verse from the early Funk Flex freestyle. I just can't believe we've made it to 2021 on podcast and not played anything from this Don Q verse, because I think about it easily once a week. So let's just play something while we have the people.
My vision is clear. I'm the reason why these is here. Tie the rope around your own neck. I'm kicking a chair. Man up. Stop living with fear. I'm with the same game. Ain't changed. Too much traffic. You gotta make lanes. First of the month, I couldn't wait till that day came. Look, I deliver, take shorts, and I take change. I guess it's my fault. All we knew was the sidewalk. You feeling froggy leak? I ain't with the fly talk. I got the key.
If you've heard of Bladen County, North Carolina, it's probably because it made national headlines in 2018. When a congressional race was thrown out due to election fraud. But in Bladen, some people think the authorities got it all wrong. They say there's a powerful group still at work in the county, tampering with elections, bullying voters, stealing votes. The story behind that one election, the only time in recent history that a congressional election was thrown out for fraud, is actually the story of a series of election fights, fueled by personal grudges and petty beefs and family history and history. And it's about the oldest fight of all, the fight for the black vote.
It was almost like they realized that we weren't dumb. Like, okay, they smart.
I'm Zoe Chase, host of the Improvement Association, from the makers of Serial and the New York Times, told in 5 parts. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
A boogie, I think, if that's your man, and you're like, well, you do that thing. It's very, very easy, I think, to be like, well, I'm going to do this other thing, right? Like, we just existing in totally different spaces. But yeah, TJ, I thought for a moment, and I don't know much about TJ's crew, like his other people who are artists around him, but I thought he was going to carve out that middle lane. But again, it's like moved completely in the other direction.
It seems like people are only going into like these two extremes. Either they're going to just make like that really heavy, sad music, or they're going to go toward that poppy lane. And I think this in-between section we're talking about is probably where Polo G lands. And I think that's part of what makes him so compelling and probably my favorite of the three we're talking about.
That's interesting. So to me, Polo G lands in the middle, not only because he literally lands in the middle, but also Polo G, to my ear, toggles between the two. It's not simply that he's living in the middle. It's that sometimes he makes the choice to go more towards the TJ side, and sometimes he makes a choice to go more to the Rod Wave side. It's not always a compromise. I feel like he plays all sides of this arc. He feels like the most versatile out of all of this generation.
He is extremely versatile. You can look at a song, like he had that song with NLE Chopper, whatever it's called, Go Crazy, and he's just straight rapping on that song. You could see the similarities between Brooklyn drill, but Polo G is completely rooted in Chicago drill. You could tell that's all he grew up on, all he listened to. Even when he's like being more melodic, the lyrics still feel like they could also be from like early Little Dirk or any of the rappers from that era. And it really is an interesting middle ground.
To me, Die a Legend, this is the 2019 Polo G album. This is a phenomenal record to me. Like, this is like, it's capturing, like you say, all the drill energy, intense melody, super, super strong structural songwriting. Like, not kind of like haphazard, like, hey, we'll throw a bridge here, we'll like bring in a melodic chorus here. Like, sometimes I'll listen to records that have all these component parts, but they feel more haphazard to me. This record does not feel haphazard to me at all. I feel like he's gotten maybe a little bit crisper and cleaner as you move towards last year's record. And obviously, like, he has the number one song in the country right now, Rap Star. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how he's shifted between Die a Legend and The GOAT from 2019 into 2020 and 2021.
I think it's a lot more subtle than either Rod Wave or Little TJ, just because their like transformations are extremely noticeable, while he has really, like you said, the main change is that it sounds more polished. Like if you listen to a song from like Deep Wounds, it's like this rawness in his voice that he doesn't really go to as much anymore.
Yeah. Can we listen? Actually, let's listen to Deep Wounds. Everybody knows Pop Out, which is the record with Lil TJ on this record. That was a big hit. But to me, Deep Wounds is one of several songs on this record that are more emblematic of the sound of this record, I think. Let's listen to Deep Wounds.
I've been scarred by your love, left my heart bleeding. My soul posted in the shadows with some dark demons. I'm on the E-way in a fast foreign car speeding. 223 spit out quick when that chopper ringing. We ain't never ducking beef, we not vegan. Mollin' about that action, maybe Glock squeeze.
The melody he uses is a little bit cleaner. Like, early on, you could tell that he grew up rapping. He didn't really grow up singing. Yes. Singing was something that he adopted later on, while somebody like TJ always slightly had, he was always more melodic, and even Rod Wave's more melodic. He's heading in a direction where he's trying to sing a little bit more, but he's still also rapping. So it's in this, like, we're going back to this middle ground again.
Of this micro generation that we're talking about, Polo G seems like the most obvious, I mean, you know, crossover is a dumb word, but like the most obvious, like crossover breakout, potentially moving into like a more of a pure pop space. Why do you think that is? What is it about what he's doing that makes him well suited for that?
I think there's like a resistance in especially like the rap world and rap popularity to artists that so like overtly want to sound like pop music, which TJ does. Like there's something in Polo G's voice where it is accessible, but it also is some sort of resistance to that. And I think that's something that really resonates with people, like, oh, he's a pop star, but he feels kind of like he's still doing his own thing. And he's not just like forming his music to fit whatever traditionally should be a pop rap song. And while he does make some concessions, it's not that like heavy-handed.
What do you make of Rapstar?
I think that's like a weaker Polo G song, but it's kind of simple and easy to get the melody, and it's in between like his rapping and the singing. If you were to show somebody a Polo G song, like not if you were to show them the best song, but like what he sounds like, that is like a good example of it, but he has better songs.
I agree. There's like a distillation on that song. It's like Polo G for dummies, kind of. You need an entry point? Here's an entry point. You know, for I think if you've been paying attention for the last 3 years, Rapstar would not strike you as like a particularly remarkable song. But I think if it was the first Polo G song you ever heard, you might really enjoy it. And maybe it would give you the gateway, you know, to go revisit the older stuff.
Yeah, I feel like that's the whole purpose of that song is just to open him up to some new fans, and while also just like pleasing the old ones, being like, okay, this is fine. That could also be a problem, because if the whole album sounds like that, then you're like, what is the point of any of this? This is all just trying to get new fans while just trying to please me enough that I don't complain.
I think that's accurate, but to me, when I listen to it, I don't really experience it so much as like a Polo G song. I experience it as a Polo G marketing decision in the form of a song. It tells me a lot about where I think Polo G aims to be 6 months from now or 12 months from now. That's kind of how I experience it. Like when it came up on New Music Friday, you know, we do our playlist, our weekly singles playlist. And I listened to it and I was like, nah, it doesn't tell me anything new about Polo G. So I was just like, oh, I'm not going to write about it. And then of course it ends up being one of the number one songs in the country. I was like, okay, well that's curious. But it made me understand, I feel like, what its intended function was. Sometimes you can feel a song has an intended function more so than an aesthetic function. If that makes sense.
But I feel like I hate when songs do that. And it makes me it kind of makes me enjoy them less when I could tell, when you're able to tell just by hearing it, what it's trying to do, who it's trying to bring in. And it just makes it feel a bit unnatural.
I think that's absolutely right. But it's also the reason, for example, we're having a long talk about Polo G on Popcast, but maybe not a long talk about No Cap, even though I would love to have a long talk about No Cap. You know what I mean? It's like, because Polo G is like deliberately making these choices to inject himself into these broader conversations. You want to talk about No Cap for a minute?
I mean, I love some No Cap. I love Rilo. Of all the rappers we're going to talk about today, those two are my favorites.
What's your favorite No Cap song? Or what's like a great No Cap song?
Drown in My Styrofoam is my go-to lately. Or Dead Faces. Let's go Drown in My Styrofoam.
All right, let's play that.
Catch them on Holiday Eve, and we go right at them. I got some ops in the streets, and I got some that's rap. I hate when they say that I changed. Why do not nobody think? I'm just working harder. I'm still fighting charges. Then come this fall for nothing. I'm a worthless star. You broke my heart into a million pieces. I left my lubricants and all my Yeezys. That ain't nothing, I really hope you bleach. Burn up my garment. Have fun with that designer.
So, No Cap, for the last, I feel like it's 2 years. It's probably more than 2 years. Let's say 2 to 2.5 years. I feel like there's like a new No Cap record every 4 months or something, every 6 months. Like the output has been very, very consistent and also consistently very good. Heads really care about No Cap. Aficionados really care about No Cap. People who are paying attention really care. But it doesn't seem to have cracked into like whatever that next level of consciousness is. What do you think is the obstacle or the gap between there and here?
I think it might just be a style like that Mobile Alabama style is still something that people are getting used to. In that when we're talking about Rod Wave and Polo G and even TJ, their songwriting leans more towards storytelling sometimes, while No Cap and Rilo Rodriguez, they sound like if they were using a different delivery, they could be battle rappers. It's literally just punchline after punchline, wordplay and wordplay and wordplay. And it's kind of relentless. Even you could go up to, like, I love talking about Detroit rap, but Detroit rap is like that too. It's just a lot of punchlines and punch. Yes. There's a whole lot of punchlines. And I feel like that's a style that's getting more popular. So as that gets more popular, No Cap and Rilo Rodriguez will grow
too. Maybe we'll have their moment. So basically what you're saying is, look, obviously we are recording this on the day the release of Michigan Boat Boy. What you're saying is that the Michigan Staten Island Connect, where you and BFB the Pac-Man start putting out records together, that's imminent is what you're saying. You're on the verge of that.
Of course.
Michigan is fun. Also, like, as much as I love Polo and Rod, I don't always feel like joy emanating from these records, right? Michigan is so fun. Energetically, it just reminds me of like 1991 or 1990, you know? It's just like a specific kind of vibe that I feel has been largely missing for a long time. It's like so refreshing to hear people rap really, really well and obviously understand that there is a baseline amount of pleasure that you should extract from rapping really well. You know what I mean? Like, it's not work. It should be joyful.
It's all pretty much fun. Like, I don't listen to Rod Wave and Polo G every day for a reason. Because, you know, sometimes there's a break for that.
Uh-huh.
But when you're talking about Michigan, there's just so many new rappers. Like, every couple of weeks, there's somebody new that's popping up and that's interesting and that's making fun songs. And you kind of just want to be like immersed in it, you know?
For me, Babyface Ray is the person who, like, I find myself consistently returning to. Obviously, also Rio. Who are the folks that you find yourself returning to over and again?
Those are definitely two of the key ones. I mean, Babyface Ray can make anything sound cool. Rio will say things that you probably shouldn't repeat, but will kind of just like blow your mind that anybody's actually thinking like that. And I also think V's is another one. He has this really good song last year called Law and Order, which is him just like rapping over like a sample of the SVU theme, which is, that song's pretty sick.
Some old Cameron type.
It is. That's a good comparison because it's really just like them just trying to say like packing in punchlines, but also just trying to make it sound as cool as possible.
Yeah, it's like flamboyant and flagrant at the same time.
Exactly.
we haven't talked about Cantrell at all. I feel like we should do like a 10-part series, to be honest. I want to play the new Youngboy single, which is called Territorial.
Say you mind, you so territorial. Don't hurt me, that's all I know. You ask how I feel, like I'm stranded all alone on the road. Trying to find something good in this route I trod. Trying to see why someone so beautiful on my soul. I slang that thing for my mind, mind. Let go this game for the love of my mind.
I sometimes wonder if Youngboy is the most singular artist of the last 5 years or the most influential. I can't quite tell sometimes. I sort of toggle between the two because it's very clear he's operating. I mean, he's locked up right now for potentially a long time. It's very clear he is moving at his own rhythm. But it's also clear it set a template that a lot of people kind of like started to follow. Do you feel like you see a young or hear a Youngboy influence musically or dispositionally? Or do you feel like almost he's like Rod Wave, where it's just like a Youngboy thing is like a one of one? It's like its own thing.
It's a little bit of both. I think that you can't really sound like Youngboy, like the aggression and all that stuff. You could like use his producers or whatever, but it's pretty singular. But I think the thing that has been influential, and we were talking about it with Rod Wave, is how insular it all feels. There's just not a lot of ways that we seem to be able to get to Youngboy that he doesn't just put on his like Instagram live or something like that, or just put out himself. And it feels like he almost exists in his own world, which is what Rod Wave is trying to build, where you don't need anything outside of this. I have my fans, my loyal fans. If people outside of that loyal group come in, that's cool. But if not, we're fine with that. And I feel like that world he's built is what has been most influential, because I feel like that's the goal of every artist, especially in the South right now.
In a way, it reminds me the most of that kind of like early to mid 90s period where, you know, Jive Records was like going out and signing up regional Southern rap or regional Bay Area rap. And basically, like, I don't want to say leaving it alone, because that's not 100% accurate, because obviously they were fiddling and like not clearing samples and stuff, like, you know, like forcing re-records of samples on UGK albums and stuff. But in essence, just basically being like, we're going to sign UGK and just like more or less let UGK be UGK. Like, we kind of know it's not going to end up on Hot 97. You know, like, we know that. It's still weird. Like, I heard Funk Flex playing a Youngboy song on the radio like a month or two ago, and it was really weird. It was weird.
That sounds weird.
Yeah, it's like, I'm like, we all make choices that we don't believe in. I understand. It's like, we're all like, you know, we're all people who have to make compromises in our lives. But I just like, I was like, do you love NBA Youngboy? Have you not heard of NBA Youngboy before this week? Like, I couldn't quite tell, you know, it felt off. And also just hearing Youngboy on Hot 97, no matter how much Hot 97 has changed over the years, it still felt like five steps beyond wherever Hot 97 has landed in the 2021 ecosystem.
It doesn't really fit with Hot 97's blend of like Whoopty remixes. And so I don't know what Funk Flex is doing in his home. I don't know where he lives, maybe Jersey, but I bet he's not sitting there listening to very much Youngboy.
But I think it's so great that someone can have a career at this level of success and still fundamentally be considered like a bit of a mystery, still be considered like someone who's operating outside of all the systems that we've like come to be used to over the last like 10, 20 years, you know? So I think what you're saying is right, which is that the mystique and the career structure that Youngboy has built may in fact be more influential than the music he makes, which I think is already very influential.
There's a difference in his sadness. It's a lot more painful than where Rod Wave is, feels like sometimes he might just like burst into like tears. But it's more like these like angry tears, like he's like built up with rage.
Yeah, like Rod Wave is sad. Youngboy is frustrated.
Yeah.
If we had to boil it down to like one adjective.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit more than frustrated, but it's
yeah. I'm trying to be polite here.
It's like when you used to see like a little kid get mad and they get like so red and they like don't want to cry, but they're going to. And
Oh, my God. Oh, too real, too real, too real. Oh, my gosh. What you're starting to see now are also like these kind of like almost like one-off songs that are from not yet people with like real heavy careers. The Mooski record is really big right now. Trackstar. Let's listen to Trackstar for a second.
Hey, hey. She's a runner, she's a track star. She gon' run away when it gets hard. She can't take the pain, she can't get scarred. She hurt anyone that gets involved. Don't wanna commit, why take it this far? She gon' do the race, just not this one. Love is a game you used to cheer for. When I was down to talk, you weren't here for. You, woo, woo, woo.
So this is like, I think, kind of maybe a big TikTok record. It's starting to get radio run. It's funny. It's a song about heartbreak and mistrust, but it's like maybe much more lighthearted than your average Rod Wave song about heartbreak or mistrust, or even your TJ heartbreak and mistrust, or I should say mistrust and mistrust TJ song. What do you think about the Mooski record?
I think it sucks, but
yes,
but
big take.
It is like, I guess it's like a easier, lighter version of like, if you don't want to listen to like that really sad, like Rod Wave Polo G's type stuff, that you could get the sound of it, but without the sadness. It's kind of like almost bright. And my mind might have been changed by TikTok, because I just see like a bunch of just like 18, 19 year olds
white girls
dancing to it. Yeah. And so I'm sure that's changed like my perception of just like what the song was made to be. But it definitely feels just like a lighter, easier version of those type of records.
Like I said, I was thinking a lot about TJ and Mosey. And like you see like Mosey pop up on like a Dixie D'Amelio remix, you know? So it's like that just lets me know like how Mosey is perceived in like the major label ecosystem, right? You know, like Blueberry Faygo ends up becoming a template for like what Mosey is going to try to achieve before the current situation, at least. And, you know, Tekka, I think, sort of a little rappier, but kind of falls into that as far as the sweetness. But Mooski, whatever tension is in Mosey or TJ between like maybe how they were 3 years ago and how they are now, I don't know enough about Mooski's backstory, but it does feel there is less internal tug of war. It just feels like we're literally just going to, you know, like scraping the foam off the top of a cappuccino or something. It's like, we're just going to do this. We're not going to do all the other stuff. That's kind of how that song feels.
Like a big part of the appeal of all this music we're talking about is the emotion behind it. And if you don't have all that emotional weight, then it kind of doesn't stand out.
On the other side of that, and this is maybe heading back in the Rod Wave direction, what do you feel about, is it Moray? Moray, right?
Yeah.
Let's listen to Quicksand by Moray.
Falling in deep with the quicksand. Flag on my ass, no quick brand. I was packing on the pounds, got my weight up. Had beef in the streets, had to stay up. Betty Crocker show me how to bake a cake, bro. Doing that, put everything I'll ever stake, bro. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Quicksand to me feels, I don't want to say like someone was like, let's try and do another Rod Wave. It's not that literal. But I do think as far as like the churchiness of it, the melancholy of it, it's a little bit more overtly lyrical, I think. But like it's moving more in that space.
It's also a little bit more upbeat, I would say. I mean, you've said it a lot. Rod Wave is pretty miserable. And Moray he's also like singing a little bit more, I would say.
I mean, I feel like I've spent like half of the last 10 years like trying to write sentences like this, where I'm like, he's a singer, but deploying hip hop cadences rather than he's a rapper deploying the melodies of our, you know, it's like I'm trying to draw an arc and like put everybody on the arc from singing to rapping and being like, well, you're 80% this and 20% that and da 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 da. But yes, I agree. Moray is like more of a, like he's a singer who I think listens to a lot of rapping more than a sing rapper.
And especially he doesn't have like that heaviness that comes with a Rod Wave song. And even when we're talking about Quicksand, it kind of feels kind of fun. And I've never got that from a Rod Wave song. And even like the video is kind of just like him, a Rod Wave video would be him alone, just like sitting by like in a home or a hotel room. But the Moray video,
miserable.
Yeah, the Moray video, he's like around people, he's hanging out with people, he's outside. And it's just like a completely different vibe, even though the style is similar.
Some of that is the vocal tone. Obviously, Rod Wave has that heavy viscosity in the vocal tone, that real blues texture. Moray, you know, he like goes up at the end of his syllables. He's like, "Rrr." It's a higher pitched voice. And also an interesting, I do think another touch point for him and Rod, Moray sounds like a gospel guy to me. Like those are gospel rhythms in some of those songs. Like I feel like the presentation feels gospel influenced, not overt. Again, not like Anthony Brown or whatever, or, you know, not that level, but in terms of like how you say words on a microphone to inspire and touch people, you know, like you want to like, I want to bring them in. I want to like have them come. And like that arc, that syllabic arc feels very gospel-y to me. And that's a different version of gospel than Rod Wave is doing, but it is striking, I think, that they are both working from some of those playbooks together.
Yeah, and I feel like it's completely intentional. I feel like we mentioned that a lot of these guys are from like the very deep South, and they probably have likely grown up around music like that and are just reflecting that.
Seen him in the club with a number of pretty things. I think I'm a widow, can't stop staring at his rings. What kind of car was he driving at?
So last thing, Al, before we go, it's really been on my mind and it kind of is hovering over the whole conversation, I think. Why do you think Nav has been so influential?
I mean, Nav was the first brown boy to get popping, so that's influential in itself. I mean, the haircut, I see a lot of people with that fade right now, the beard lineup.
Oh my God. Everybody should go read Al's interview with Nav from like, what was it, like 2018, maybe? 2019. Wow. We've lived a lot of life since then.
Not to bring it back, but Nav is kind of similar in the way to the artists we've been talking about too, just like in like what he's talking about. The emotional weight is not as serious. It's kind of just like, oh, I was like really sad and this girl didn't like me. And that's like an area like that somebody like Lil TJ goes to sometimes, but in a different way. And so I legitimately like enjoy listening to Nav. I think it's pretty funny, even if it's not intentionally funny. I mean, I think some of like Rod Wave stuff is kind of funny too, like unintentionally. There's no way you can be this sad all the time. And he'll just say something that is like, that doesn't feel like it should be delivered with this much pain. And he does it anyway. And I think that's kind of like amusing.
Yeah, it's become a trope in essence. Like, and again, it's not to invalidate the truth of it, but it is certainly like by the time you get to the end of Soulfly, like it's a little draining. It's a little draining to get to the end of Soulfly because you're like, wow, like I really just got like kicked in the stomach, like 16 songs in a row.
It's a lot. You won't feel like that at the end of a Nav album. You just want to keep going.
I bring up Nav because I know Al has a particular history with Nav, but I do think fundamentally Nav belongs in this conversation. Certainly almost, I would say, dare I say, as a precursor for the Mosey pop move or the precursor for a Mooski. I almost feel like Nav helps set the table for that. Might be a hot take, might be a too hot to touch take, but it's something that we have to reckon with if we're going to write the history of the last 4 or 5 years. I just want to throw it out there.
So you're saying the last 5 years of rap is all influenced by Nav?
I'm saying that you said that. How about that?
I mean, I'll take that.
Okay. Al Pierre, always a signature joy. I'm happy to talk to you, man.
Thank you, John.
Before we go this week, look, we're just coming off of the passing of DMX. Just like generationally a real struggle for me. And then just in the last few days, we've lost two other really important rappers, for me at least, Black Rob and Shock G from Digital Underground. Post Biggie, Black Rob was an important part of that next 2.0 wave of Bad Boy, Black Rob and G Dep, especially Mark Curry. Bad Boy had really taken hip hop in a glossy direction, in a pop oriented direction. And a lot of what Black Rob was doing was kind of pulling it back in a less glamorous direction. Really, really impressive rapper, really signature voice. And from what it seems, at least on the internet, kind of had struggled a lot in recent years. Very, very upsetting to know. RIP to Black Rob. Let's listen to Black Rob's verse on Bad Boy for Life.
We can't be stopped now, cause it's Bad Boy for Life.
Hey, look, straight from the Harlem streets. I don't play, I push it down with the Harlem heat. All of a sudden, got a problem with me.
Black, what happened?
They running around acting like the black don't care eat. And you know what?
Last night, the news came through that Shock G from Digital Underground had passed. In the early 90s, the Digital Underground Sex Packets record, it's like this pretty impressive concept album. To me, Digital Underground was like, it's Bootsy Collins, right? It's P-Funk. It's all of that psychedelic, futuristic, eccentric energy just happened to be routed through a hip-hop lens. But in terms of like, the peers or the stylistic inheritance, it's all funk. Shock G was also Humpty Hump. A lot of aliases did a tremendous amount of the production for Digital Underground. Maybe all the production, I can't swear to it, but it did a lot of it. Digital Underground thrived in a time, you know, this is pre The Chronic, pre Snoop. There was a lot of eccentric, curious, very, very historically, musically inclined experimentation happening on independent labels in hip hop. Digital Underground was on Tommy Boy. In many ways, what DU was doing felt like potentially a West Coast compatriot to what De La Soul was doing on the East Coast in terms of how it was interacting with the music of the 70s and 80s. There's a tremendous amount of exuberance and pleasure and humor and wit and savvy in Digital Underground's, certainly the first two albums. Everybody knows the Humpty Dance, obviously. But I think we should just go back and go out this week with Do What You Like, which is the first breakout Digital Underground single. That's our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Get on the podcast Facebook group. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Discord. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get audio, Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. Do what you like. All right. Sean.
If you're fat, you're dirty, and need to take a bath, go wash your feet. Just bugging in the place to be. You got the sound of Shock G. All right.